We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, it's a sad, sad Sunday. You got the Sunday scaries with the work week about to begin. Last night was a scary, scary Thunder matchup, a game seven at home, which are always scary. I've got the Sunday scaries, man, in full effect. How are you doing today?
Surprisingly good after watching the Thunder lose in game seven last night. I was at the game. It was awesome. Truthfully, it was awesome. It was a legendary game to be at, and I'm doing surprisingly well, all things considered. And it probably helps that my daughter's just like the best person in the world, and we've just had the best morning. We went outside. She had this like butterfly stick a little while back, and she's been wanting to plant it. And it's been a nice morning. So I thought I would be in much more pain if the Thunder lost to the Spurs than what I'm actually in.
My microphone kind of cut out at the beginning of the show, so sorry if anybody didn't hear the opening. But Colby's doing a lot better than me. I've got the Sunday scaries, basically, if you missed what I said. But boy, we got a lot to discuss with Oklahoma State, but man, it's hard for me to get over that Thunder game, which we'll discuss in full. I know there's one commenter on our YouTube channel that just can't stand the fact we talk about Thunder. I had to respond, Colby. It's like, if you want me to break down baseball and softball for an hour every week, you've come to the wrong place. I'm never going to be breaking down an NCAA baseball regional for an hour. Certainly we have a lot to discuss with Oklahoma State, and we will do so, but I think the Thunder playing for an NBA championship essentially is worthy of our time. It's a pretty big deal in the state, Colby. So we'll talk about Thunder. We'll talk about the big match that you've been hinting at for a long time with Oklahoma State Golf 2018 team against the 2025. A really cool deal there on Golf Channel's YouTube page. Got some kick times as well, but first, let's get to Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. We appreciate Chris's, as always. Should be just a unbelievable atmosphere as we get into football season next fall. The kick times have been announced, so we'll know. You got to be at Chris's bright and early for the Oregon matchup, which we will, I'm sure, have lots of thoughts and takes on leading up to that game. Just a monumental non-conference clash for Oklahoma State. You're going to want to stop by Chris's anytime you're in Stillwater, but especially ahead of that game, because you're going to be wanting to wear the latest and greatest apparel. Because, Colby, you got Oregon coming to town. You got to look sharp. I mean, they've been the standard bearers for all things cool, all things Nike, all things uniform related, and certainly all things apparel related. We got to look our best when Oregon comes to town, right?
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about this game some this offseason in the context of like, man, it's really tough to have Dante Moore and those guys coming to town, and it's going to be really tough to go 3-0 in the non-conference. And I think we have not given enough credit to the fact that, like, it's kind of awesome that Oregon's coming to town the second week of the season. Like, it's going to be awesome to have the Ducks in. Like, the atmosphere in Stillwater is going to be unbelievable. Yeah, we'll all be there. My wife and I and kiddo, we'll all be there for Oklahoma State, Oregon. And that's a bucket list item to be at that game. So, yeah, I don't think we'll win it. Obviously, I've said that many times. Oregon is incredible. They're one of the top five programs nationally for the last 10 years. But, yeah, I can't wait for that game. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, two programs I've always felt were very similar. Obviously, Oregon has taken their program to just unprecedented heights in the meantime, but there was a period of time where I think you could throw Oregon, Oklahoma State, and Clemson kind of in the same bucket of newer blue bloods, essentially. Is Oklahoma State a true and true blue blood? No, but they were certainly on that path, and certainly in that grouping, I think, with Oregon. And, you know, obviously Oklahoma State with the uniforms has tried to to make themselves more well-known that way as well. So just a lot of parallels there, a lot of parallels with Clemson, which we'll talk about as well when we talk about Terry Don Phillips' passing, a really important key figure in Oklahoma State athletics history, which I want to touch on quite a bit. But first, Colby, I think the one sport still going on right now besides golf, golf is still very much competing for a national championship, is baseball. Their season is not done. They have extended the season to an elimination game today. They will play whatever USC Upstate is. Colby and I were talking before the show about how I've watched college athletics since I can remember. I'm 41 years old. I've never heard of USC Upstate in my lifetime. I feel like I've heard of every school there is, following like NFL draft, NBA draft. You hear all these. I remember when Marist came to town for the NIT back in the day in Stillwater, and everyone was like, "What is Marist?" So I feel like most schools I've heard of, Colby. Can you enlighten me any on what the heck USC Upstate is?
Yeah, South Carolina Upstate, Oklahoma State played them on Friday. And if I'm remembering right, I watched that game. I watched the last four innings of that game. Their first tournament win in their school's history, I believe, was against Oklahoma State on Friday. And it was just like we couldn't dig ourselves out of a hole. It's just sometimes I wonder why can't we have nice things. Like Aiden Miola, they said he broke his wrist like the day before the game at practice. Like, just absolutely brutal to have one of your best players go down. And then you wind up in the bottom of the ninth with bases loaded and one out. And who's up at the plate? Aiden Miola's replacement. He strikes out. It was a bad at bat, struck out looking. Next hitter comes to the plate, bad at bat, strikes out looking. It was a tough way to go down in that one. It was, I want to say, a good win yesterday against ASU. But, I mean, you were up 6-0 the majority of the game. You let them storm back. You end up having to beat them in 11 innings. And it'll actually be Alabama that Oklahoma State plays today, Carson. It's Alabama at 2 p.m. in the winner's bracket since Oklahoma State beat ASU and moved on. And then the baseball regionals confused me a little bit. I'm trying to pull the bracket up, but the internet keeps giving me like...
Is that right? I looked at NCAA's website.
I'm on PFP. I'm on PFP, so either NCAA has it wrong or PFP has it wrong, because PFP has Oklahoma State facing Alabama at 2 p.m. on Sunday, and yeah, they beat Alabama State yesterday afternoon. I'm just not super optimistic about Oklahoma State's chances to continue to advance in this regional. We talked about it beforehand, Carson. You needed to stay on the good side of the bracket, not lose that first game, not be playing extra games, and then you go to 11 innings against Alabama State. Like, you're putting a lot of pressure on your arms losing that first game in a competitive fashion, winning that second game, but having to grind it out for 11 innings. And now you've got to play the tournament host in Alabama, who's a really good team, one of the top 10 teams in the country. So I'm not overly optimistic about Oklahoma State's chances this afternoon, and I wouldn't be shocked for their season to be coming to an end pretty soon. But I think there's a difference between belief and hope. I have hope. I don't have belief right now for Oklahoma State at the baseball regional, if that makes sense and is fair. It's just – They just needed a thing or two here or there to go right against SC Upstate on Friday. You know, Colley Ritchie goes 0-for-5. He has a big opportunity with the bases loaded. I think it was in the bottom of the eighth. First pitch, he rolls one over to the right side, and it's a force out to end the inning. It's just they couldn't get the big hit whenever they needed it. They give up the big hits, and I think this is going to go down as a very average baseball season. You didn't bottom out. It wasn't a disaster. You were a two-seed at a regional. But it just felt like they were always swimming upstream a little bit throughout this season. And I think that their season is probably going to be over sooner rather than later.
Well, I got to correct you again. They're playing USC Upstate Sunday at 2, today at 2 o'clock.
What?
We're taping this around 11:20 in the morning. And then they will face the winner of that game will take on Alabama at 7 o'clock Sunday. That's right. Because I looked up the NCAA's website. Maybe Marshall got his streams crossed, or maybe we just can't read. Maybe reading comprehension is a struggle for us. But they got to go through USC Upstate to get a shot at Bama. But the season's not over, Colby. I mean, crazier things have happened. They had to go 11 innings with Alabama State, like you mentioned, 8-7 win there. They're still ranked 19th in the country. And hey, who knows? You beat USC Upstate, you get a shot at Bama at 7 o'clock. Crazier things have happened, but it does feel like this is just going to be kind of one of those seasons where nothing seemingly went right. The Miola injury is just like you just start shaking your head. Like, what more could go wrong? I feel like the Thunder a little bit. Like, who else can get hurt when Caruso's banging his hand on the rim? just feels like one of those kind of snake pit type seasons here, as they were one of the hottest teams in the country coming down the stretch. But who knows? We'll have to see. But they're not dead yet, and it wasn't just, you know, two and Q and out of there. So I think that's the positive, is that they're still fighting, scratching and clawing. And who knows? Maybe they can extend their season here this afternoon.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I'm glad that we got that cleared up with the conflicting schedules that we were looking at. So, yeah, please don't lose twice to SCF State. You lose tonight to Alabama, all good with that. Tournament host, top 10 team in the country. I'd really like to not be SCF State's first and second win of their program's history at an NCAA regional. So, yeah, hopefully that they can advance to play Alabama tonight.
Yep. We got some kickoff time news. I hinted at that earlier. Oklahoma State has announced with their television partners their non-conference schedule. They'll play Tulsa at 2:45, which is an odd kick time on ESPNU. I guess it's 2:30. They always say 2:30, but it really kicks around 2:45, I guess. Maybe they're just being more accurate. Or maybe that'll kick closer to 3. Who knows? That's one thing I don't like about college football, Colby, is the kick times are never what the actual time says it is. Then Oregon at 11 a.m. on ESPN, which is the big one, obviously. And then they host Murray State at 6 o'clock on the dreaded ESPN Plus. Those are all consecutive Saturdays, September 5th, September 12th, and September 19th. And then the following Saturday's matchup at West Virginia on September 26th will be televised on Fox or FS1 with a kickoff time to be determined later. So, Colby, I think this is part of doing TV business. You would love a night game against Oregon, but 11 o'clock gets you that much bigger audience and that much more desirable TV window for the network partners.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, I the 2:45 kick time at Tulsa, God bless anybody who goes to Chapman Stadium and sits in the baking sun on September 5th at 2:45. That is a brutal kick time. I promise you, I am not making the trip to Tulsa for that one. You're going to bake. As far as Oregon, 11 a.m. on the 12th, I don't hate that, because I'll be taking a four-year-old with me, and that just makes it real easy to get up early in the morning, get to Stillwater early, hang out for a little while. We're home before dinner time. We can settle into our night. Like, I, as a parent, the 11 a.m. kick time is – I know a lot of people get frustrated with those. That's peak for parenting. So, selfishly, I like the 11 a.m. kick. 6 p.m. for Murray State. Yeah, if I'm going to sit around and watch Oklahoma State kick Murray State's teeth in the heat, let's do it at 6 o'clock whenever I'll be in the shade. So, I don't hate the opening three kick times, because the first one's on the road. I don't have to worry about that heat. The second one gets me done by 3 o'clock, and I can get on with my evening with my family. And then the third one's in the shade. So, I always look at these things through my personal lens, and through my personal lens, I'm here for those three kick times in the non-con.
When I hear 11 a.m. kick in Stillwater, it like takes me back in time. Okay, so young Carson in college, I think I was a freshman, maybe sophomore, I think freshman. Bedlam in Stillwater, first ever college game day in Stillwater. Yours truly stayed out all night. Oh. May have got an hour of sleep. Woke up and continued the party rolling all the way to the game day set. And when I think of 11 a.m. kickoffs at East West Stadium in Stillwater, that sun's hitting one side of your face. I got home that day as the infamous Adrian Peterson spin move game. My college friend Jason Ricks was the kicker at time. Narrowly missed a field goal. He got way too much heat for that. It was a 43-yarder, I want to say. Someone will correct me, I'm sure. It was 40-plus. And I get home, Colby, and like half of my face is like fried, just completely sunburned. And obviously I was a little worse for the wear, having not gotten much sleep and consuming many beverages over the course of 24 hours. So when I think of 11 a.m. kickoff, it's probably better for you and the parents nowadays than it is for those college kids. I imagine a lot of our listeners who are in school right now will suffer the same fate I did with the half sunburned face.
Yes, they probably will. I do think that there's it's a catch 22 with the students, because if it's a night game and it's like a big atmosphere, like Oklahoma State, Oregon, what are the students doing? They're staying out the night before. And then, I mean, I guess they at least probably get to sleep in that scenario, but then they're going hard all day until the game ends at 10:30. And then they're going hard still till 1 o'clock in the morning.
It's ideal.
Yeah, I don't know. When you're 20, 21 years old, you can do that stuff. You're young. your body can handle it. You can bounce back. We can't do that, Carson. You and me, honestly, sounds awful. Nothing sounds worse to me than staying out all night partying and then being out all night in the heat and doing that. Sounds awful.
First
but at 20
game
years
day
old,
ever.
I'll have fun.
Like you had to rally because, like, you know, we all grew up at the time. We'd all seen College Game Day just on ESPN. Like, the opportunity to actually go was just unheard of. Certainly, it had been in Norman a few times. We're not going down there. The fact
and
that it
to
was
our
Bedlam,
younger viewers. To our younger viewers, like, game day now is like one of the things that's on Saturday morning, and Fox has one, and you can just wake up and stream stuff, and you have unlimited viewing options. 20 years ago, appointment viewing, Saturday mornings, appointment viewing.
It was a big, big, big deal. And the fact that and this is still the Les Miles era, like the fact that we were still getting our feet underneath us, which we'll talk about here in just a second with Terry Don. And, like, Adrian Peterson's coming to town. I think both teams were ranked. It was a really good game. Like, it was just – I didn't think college football got any bigger than that at the time. So, you had to rally for the Les Miles and company. Speaking of which, I wanted to touch on this, Colby. You know, Terry Don Phillips was the longtime athletic director at Oklahoma State. He then moved on to Clemson after that. He died at age 78. After like a 10-year kind of battle with dementia. He served as the AD from 2002. Or wait, he died in Clemson. 95 to 02 is what I'm seeing. Held administrative roles at Liberty and Arkansas as well. But when I talk so much on this show, Colby, about I lost my place here. When I talk about on this show so much about Oklahoma State not even like attempting to win at football and not even really being a professional athletic department, like as far as like even really doing what it takes to compete, like it really is amazing what like Mike Holder took the golf program and just started winning just because he was so good at his job and got his own funding on his own. He really had to do it all by himself. I think the wrestling program succeeded despite not being a true athletic department. But when Oklahoma State, you know, you can go through all the years, but the fact they let their stadium get to the Rust-Oleum Lewis Field and the fact that they didn't have their stuff together. Well, in comes Terry Don Phillips in 95. And here are all the kind of the big impact items he had involvement with. He persuaded OSU and the alumni to support the Gallagher-Iba renovation, $56 million expansion. The basketball program at the time was a national, you know, force. They went from 6,300 to 13,000. In 89 to 2000, the program was suffering through NCAA penalties. And this is a lot of this is from Bill Haston's story on the Tulsa World. I encourage everyone to go read it. But OSU was coming out of probation period from 89 to 2000. They were just awful. And he hires Les Miles, who, of course, took them to two Bedlam wins, three bowl trips, really put Oklahoma State football back on the map. He also inspired Oklahoma State to really have more of a tailgating scene on campus. Now you and I talk, Colby, it's as good as anywhere in the country. What else did he do here? He saw the value in expanding Gallagher-Iba and really started getting the ball rolling for modernizing the football stadium as well. This is from what Terry Don said in 1999. This facility and other facilities we have to develop. They are not luxuries. They are absolute necessities for us to compete effectively in the Big 12. Chad Weiberg said Phillips had a great vision. It's pretty remarkable when you reflect on it to expand the arena the way he did. It was quite the project. Think about how different our athletic village concept would have been if a new arena had been built somewhere off campus. And there was talk about that at the time, about possibly doing that. It would have completely changed the trajectory of everything that was done since then. Boone Pickens Stadium, the Tennis Center, Obrate Stadium, everything. Like, when you step on campus now, and all those sparkling facilities, and the fact that it is a big-time athletic department, I think you can give Terry Don Phillips a majority of that credit for where Oklahoma State is as an athletic department today versus when he got there in 1995. And you look at what he's done at Clemson. Look at what he's done at Clemson. He hires Dabo Swinney. Clemson was They weren't as bad as Oklahoma State. They were a respectable ACC program. They'd go 7-5, 8-4 most years. Look at where they are now after what he did when he entered that program as well. So I really, when we reflect on where Oklahoma State is today versus where they were in the past, I think you have to bring up, among all the names between Boone Pickens, Mike Holder, Terry Don Phillips' name needs to be right there alongside them.
Yeah, he was there at a pivotal time for Oklahoma State athletics, late 90s, and then leading into that Les Miles era. And some of the things that Terry Don Phillips did, like kind of like you were saying and like Chad Weiberg talked about, it laid the foundation for what Oklahoma State athletics turned into. Because prior to Terry Don Phillips, Oklahoma State athletics was, oh, man, those Barry and Thurman teams were fun. Like, there was that. I mean, there was some good football played in the 70s, and everything before that was like Henry Iba in 1945, and there just wasn't a lot there. The foundation of Oklahoma State athletics was not strong the way it needed to be to evolve as collegiate athletics evolved and keep up with the times and get us to the point where we're at now. Where Oklahoma State, throughout the past 10, 15, 20 years, has at times been extremely competitive and at the highest level in almost every sport across the board, men's and women's. Like, Oklahoma State has been at or near the mountaintop in every sport across the board. I don't know that that happens without Terry Don Phillips' vision coming in and saying, look, we have to invest. We have to expand the arena. And I understand that a lot of those seats are empty nowadays, but look what the environment's like in there for wrestling. And when basketball's good, that place gets crazy. When basketball was really good, rolling in 2004, like, that was one of the best arenas in the country, and part of that was the expansion, how many people were in that building, how on top of you everybody was. That's part of that. We know Cowgirl Stadium, he got that built as well. And the Les Miles hire, Carson, it just signified Oklahoma State is here to spend and to compete in big-time college football. And yes, he leaves for Clemson in 2002. He was great for Clemson, but he really laid the foundation for what Oklahoma State athletics became after him. And obviously, there are a bunch of sliding doors moments. There are a bunch of other things that had to happen to get us to this point. Boone Pickens, key amongst them. But yeah, he's a big part of the story whenever you're talking about the history of Oklahoma State athletics, the development of Oklahoma State athletics. And yeah, he's a Cowboy legend. May he rest in peace. May his family find love and peace in what I'm sure is a very difficult time, and what I'm sure has been a very difficult time with him dealing with health problems toward the end of his life. But yeah, an all-time legendary Cowboy, no doubt.
He really changed the trajectory of what this school and athletic department could be. And I've always, when you talk about kind of the history of the program and the history of the athletic department and Terry Don's name comes up, I'm always struck by, I always go back, because to me these two things are related, even though this happened like 70 years prior to Terry's arrival in Stillwater. I took statistics at Oklahoma State University under a teacher, a professor named Bob Darcy. Did you ever take Bob Darcy's statistics class?
Not familiar with Bob Darcy. I remember my statistics class mostly because I was friends with a girl in that class, and it was a Tuesday-Thursday class, and one of us would go on Tuesdays and take all the notes, and one of us would go on Thursdays and take all the notes, and we would swap them, so we only had to go one day a week. It was great.
That's smart. You were being a little more productive than I was in college, clearly. I actually aced statistics thanks to my high school teammate, was a genius, ended up going to NYU Law School. He kind of like would say, Bob Darcy's really trying to say this, and this is what he means, and it kind of helped me understand all those numbers and everything. But the reason I bring him up is he was also somewhat of a sports historian, and he was talking about how Oklahoma State really, every time they got success, would really self-sabotage. And he brings up a name, I think I've brought this name up on the show before, of Pappy Waldorf. Are you familiar with Pappy Waldorf, Colby?
I'm familiar with the name. I've seen it around, but I could not, off the top of my head, give you a Pappy Waldorf bio.
Well, I wish I had pulled up all the numbers before, but he essentially was a coach at Oklahoma State from 1929 to 1933, and he was the first coach. In his first year, Waldorf's team won 4. They lost 3 and tied Oklahoma 7-7. So he essentially won 3 Missouri Valley Conference championships, and he never lost to Oklahoma, Colby. They held their arch rivals scoreless for 19 quarters in a row. So Pappy Waldorf had Oklahoma State dominating Bedlam in the early 1930s to late 20s. And guess what happened? He had to become the athletic director and start raising funds, and he couldn't get following the 1931 season, Oklahoma A&M could not maintain his salary and had to decrease it. So he left the university to go to Kansas State. So this guy is just beating the brakes off of Oklahoma, just dominating Bedlam, just has Oklahoma State as this up-and-coming power, winning three conference championships. And they couldn't build him lights for the football stadium, and they couldn't pay his salary. So he's like, I'm out of here. And I'm always reminded of that because that's like a sliding doors moment. Look what Oklahoma went on to become after that, post-World War II. Before that, I mean, obviously it's the 1930s, but you know what I'm saying. Look what Oklahoma football became, and look what Oklahoma State football became. Because they didn't have the facilities, they didn't have the infrastructure, they couldn't pay the salaries back then. And it kind of just started this epic slide for what Oklahoma State became ever since. And so Terry Don Phillips, to make this come full circle, was the guy who said, you know what? We're not going to be this program anymore. We're not going to be the team that plays in this rundown Rust-Oleum stadium who can't afford a big-name coach. No, we're done doing that. This is what we need to do to be successful. And so thank you to Bob Darcy. It gives a really great Oklahoma State history lesson, and it really pops into my brain when I start thinking about how Terry Don changed the culture in the early 90s.
Yeah, Carson, I love history and I love learning about stuff like that. I would love to learn even more about back then, what, 100 years ago now, you know, the Great Depression sets in 1929, and then in 1931, suddenly Oklahoma State's out of money and the football program just craters for 15 years. Yeah, that's all very interesting. I like all that. I'd like to learn more about that. So,
it's tough
whenever you lose a legend. We lost a legend.
I kind of let me reread this because I kind of got a few of the details somewhat twisted. He never lost Oklahoma. That's all true. He held them scoreless for 19 straight quarters. His reputation was soaring, was Pappy Waldorf's, and he was actively recruited by other universities. Sounds like back when Oklahoma State was a stepping stone job, right? Even back in the 30s, that was the case. Mm-hmm. In 1931, in order to deal with significant financial difficulties brought on by the Great Depression, so Oklahoma State had an excuse known as the Great Depression, a pretty good excuse, I might add. He took on the responsibilities as the athletic director. Previously, Waldorf had already brought administrative changes such as the installation of stadium lights to play night games, as well as holding some games on Fridays. He's Mike Holder before Mike Holder. Following the 1931 season, they could not maintain his salary, and that's when he left. So he did get the stadium lights done, and he played some weeknight games. Like, this guy was like 80, 90 years ahead of his time, Colby. It's crazy.
That's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable. Again, I'm fascinated by history. Like, can you imagine having lived through the Great Depression? Like, everybody was just out of money living in poverty. It's just the stories that you hear from the early 30s are just, they're unbelievable. Every time I learn something about that historical period of time, I'm like, that must have just been, it just sounds awful. But yeah, it's just, anyway, there was like a 20-year stretch there in world history where it's like, oh my God, like everybody on the planet is just miserable. Like, life is awful. But yeah, just fun little history rabbit hole we dove down there.
Well, Bob Darcy kind of broke my brain because the way he introduced it, he's like, what if I, he kind of pulled the 30 for 30. Like, what if I told you Oklahoma State had a coach had never lost to Oklahoma in football and he beat
them. That's a good lead.
He started giving his win loss record. I'm like, he's making this up. There's no way this is true. We never beat Oklahoma. So it was really, really funny. And again, yeah, all credit to Terry Don Phillips, a really important figure in Oklahoma State history. All right, Colby. Thunder lose to the Spurs. Very disappointing. And look, I think it's pretty easy to boil down. It boils down to they just didn't have enough creation and playmaking ability without, you know, a legitimate all-star in Jalen Williams and A.J. Mitchell, who was their, you know, backup point guard and really was coming into his own, becoming really a star in his own right these playoffs after what he did to the Lakers. And I think a large discussion of the offseason, Colby, is going to be centered on Chet Holmgren, his fit on this team. Can you go through the Spurs with a guy who looks frankly, terrified to play against San Antonio. I don't know. It's going to be a very, very, very long offseason for Chet Holmgren and the Thunder, because it's going to be just nonstop.
Yeah, so I've got a lot of thoughts about last night's game. Again, I was there in person. It was unbelievable. Just an incredible sporting experience. I saw a stat as the first time two teams with 60-plus wins in the regular season faced off in a Game 7 since 1981. So I had this overwhelming feeling of gratitude that I got to be there in person to witness true basketball history play out in front of me. Like, I don't know how many Hall of Famers I watched on that court last night. Like, it could have been two. It could have been five. There might have been seven or eight Hall of Famers on that court last night. There would have been more if J-Dub was playing, because he's probably a future Hall of Famer as long as health doesn't get in the way. Gratitude is the overwhelming feeling. I'd say it's like 80-20 gratitude and pain. Like, the two teams in the world I would say that I've cared about the most over the past five-ish years are Oklahoma State football and Thunder basketball. And pain, like real sports pain, is going 1-11 and being irrelevant and being totally apathetic to what happens whenever your team takes the field, takes the court. Like, that to me is real sports pain. What we went through last fall, that's real sports pain. Being at the absolute height of your sport and the other team just rains in a couple more threes in Game 7 and you get beat in a legendary game with a bunch of legendary players and your legend goes absolutely ballistic, like, that hurts. But I thought it was the least painful way, for me anyway, that Game 7 could have played out. I think that some narratives shifted last night, and I think Oklahoma City kind of went in a lot of people's eyes from being the hated dominant force in the NBA to almost this like lovable loser that really gritted it out without two of their four best players. Like, that's why Oklahoma City lost the series. They were without two of their four best players. I log on to Twitter this morning to get the link and come in here, and the top four tweets in my timeline are like Spurs guy, Shea Serrano, talking about, here's the Thunder players I respect. The next one is a montage of Wimby flops. The next one, somebody says, imagine SGA. This is Zachary, one of our listeners, says, imagine SGA leaving for the Spurs next year. Imagine how pathetic that would be. Yeah, I'm not over it. Sue me. The next one is somebody talking about all of the Spurs flopping in the series. Like, I think it can be narrative shifting to become a lovable loser. I think it can tone down some of the absurd rhetoric that Shea got. The fact that he absolutely balled out in Game 7 and just really tried to put the team on his back. Like, it was Shea and role players. The chess stuff is extremely hard to stomach, how passive he was. I'm frustrated with Chet's performance. I will offer a defense of Chet, though. My defense of Chet is, we have known all along with Chet that he is a play finisher. He is not a play creator. And without Dub and AJ, he was being asked to be someone that he flatly is not. He needs guys who can get 2 feet in the paint, collapse the defense, and then the ball can be dumped to him in the dunker spot, or it can be kicked to him in the corner. That's what Chet needs to be able to function offensively. He's not a guy who can get the ball 20 feet from the basket and put moves on a defender, get around a guy and go do things. You know, I think Mark wanted to get him involved. First play of the game, they give the ball to Chet on the left wing. They're like, drive it, Vassell. Vassell picks it, Spurs are running the other way. It's not what he does. It's not who he is. Now, the mental aspect of this matchup with Wimby, that's something he has to overcome. But I am confident that if Dub and AJ play in this series, we get a better Chet, because he's asked to play his role. He's not asked to play a role that he's not capable of playing. I'm confident that if Dub and AJ play in this series, we win the series, because Jared McCain is asked to be a role player who's playing 15 minutes a night as a spark shooter. He's not being asked to play 25 to 30 minutes and be one of your prominent ball handlers and scorers that you need to win the series. Like, the reality is, injuries do matter. And like, Pacers fans who want to say, well, Halliburton got hurt last year and that mattered. Of course it did. Of course it mattered. We don't know what the outcome of that game is if Halliburton plays. We'll never know. Just like we don't know what the outcome is if Dub and AJ play. We'll never know. That's part of the sport. We had the injuries this year. It happens. There's no asterisk on the Thunder championship last year. There will be no asterisk on the Spurs beating the Thunder this year. It is what it is. Injuries are part of the game. They were fully healthy. They got contributions from absolutely everyone across the board. And the Thunder had Shea giving it everything he had. Kaysen just getting it everything he had, turning into Klay Thompson last night. you know, Jay Will, I don't think that what Jay Will did last night will probably get enough appreciation, because so much of what he did, you could see in the arena, was off the ball. Dude, he was so physical with Wimby. Wimby was trying to catch the ball 10, 12 feet from the basket. Jay Will was not allowing it. He said, absolutely not. You're catching it 18 or 20 feet from the basket all night. He's just shoving him, making him work. I was grateful to be at that game. I'm grateful that my team is in these games. The fact that we've already won one makes it easier. Like, I remember the pain I felt in 2016 losing to Golden State. This pain is not that pain, because that team hadn't got to the mountaintop. We didn't know if that team was ever getting to the mountaintop, and that team never did get to the mountaintop. This team's already been there, man. We've already got one. And I also just – I'm extremely confident that Oklahoma City and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, this era, I'm extremely confident that we don't finish with one. So, like, yes, it hurt last night, but, man, that was a legendary game between legendary players. They made a couple more shots. We were hobbled. It is what it is. That's sports. One of the amazing things about sports is that you open yourself up to the extreme joy or the extreme pain, and you don't get to feel the extreme joy all the time. And that extreme joy doesn't exist without the extreme pain sometimes. It's part of why 21 and 23 Bedlam meant so much. Like, last night, that game probably meant about as much to me in terms of, like, my team and my hate for the opponent as anything since 2023 Bedlam. And I felt the joy and I felt the pain. And, you know, it's what's amazing about sports. I loved everything about this Thunder season. I loved everything about this Thunder team. Maybe it looks different next year. I'm betting Chet's going to be back. I'm betting Dort won't for contract reasons and stuff. But yeah, I love this team, and I love the fight they showed in this series without two of their four best players. And I can't wait for next year, man. October will be here before we know it. 4.5 months. Let's go.
That is a sound, well-reasoned, well-thought, poignant response to getting your heart ripped out in Game 7 while you're in the building. I'm going to take a slightly different approach. Like, yes, I grant you all of the things you said about Chet offensively. That's not really where I have an issue with him. I have way more of an issue with him defensively, as the runner-up in defensive player of the year, as first team all defense, getting absolutely sunned and teabagged by Champagne. I don't want to hear the name Champagne for another 12 calendar months. I hate it's Champagne. Why is his name Champagne? For the first off. Second off, he just bodies him at the rim. How many times did a guard, Vassell, all the guards, back him down and just shoot a layup over him at 7'1"? How many times did he lose a guy in the corner on a three? That's the reason the Spurs shot so well for the most part, is Chet was just a zero on defense as well as offense. I mean, I grant you, like, one of two shooting, he can't create on his own. That's why he was limited to two shots. I certainly think you're right and that he'll be better offensively. But I was almost like up to the point, you can't keep him on the floor defensively just as much as offensively. That, to me, was the biggest disappointment.
Totally fair. Totally fair criticisms. Yeah, he was mostly poor on that end. It's just a historically bad matchup for Chet. Like, he's being asked to do things on that end too. He's used to being able to kind of be the rover on the back end and contest at the rim. And I mean, these dudes from the Spurs, like, they see Chet down there and it's chum in the water. They're like, oh, this is easy. We'll just take two dribbles, put our shoulder in his chest. He'll lose his balance and fall 2 feet backward, and we'll lay this thing up and in. Totally fair criticism. To be clear, I don't have, like, an overwhelming defense of Chet. Like, this guy's unbelievable. Let's excuse all of his shortcomings in this series. Getting pushed around defensively was a problem. He's got to put on, like, 20 pounds this offseason. Like, he's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. He's got to be able to hold up against the Champagnes and Vassells of the world. I don't at any point expect him to be better than Wimby. That's not even a fair thing to ask. But he's got to be able to provide some resistance at the rim for Champagne and Vassell. Totally fair. You know, I've got people texting me last night. I'm having conversations, so many conversations about, like, can we send him to Milwaukee? Can we send him to – I had somebody ask me if we send him to Brooklyn and get Michael Porter Jr. You know, can we send him to Atlanta and get him to kill Alexander Walker? Like, all these different things floating around. Like,
Nick Wright threw out an Anthony Davis trade, which I just – was Wright's, one of the worst ideas I've ever heard.
Nick Wright's an idiot who argues in bad faith. Nick Wright spent 3 years talking about how everybody is up in arms about the way the Chiefs play and all the penalties. They're just bums and losers. Look at the stats. They're 17th in the league in penalty yards. And now the Thunder are quite literally the Chiefs of the NBA, and he hates them. He hates the way they play. Whenever he's presented with the facts about free throws and free throw rates and how the Thunder are always near the middle or bottom of the league and all those things, free throw differential, he's like, yeah, but it doesn't feel that way watching it. He's a total bum, a total idiot, argues it totally in bad faith. I have no time for anything that he says about basketball. No time.
Well, Chet's getting $41 million next year, 25% of the cap, but
yeah,
I do also disagree, like what you just said. Like the things Nick Wright's saying is what a majority of national shows are talking about. Obviously Twitter is just an echo chamber full of nonsense. Like the narratives about Shea are just off the rails. To me, that's the most disappointing thing. It's not the social media Twitter element, because Twitter is very small. It's the vocal minority, like you always like to say. It's when you get Jay Williams on ESPN doing a life alert segment on Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, when Wimby is the true grifter, the true flopper, the guy who dove
unbelievable flopper
3 feet across the court in against the Timberwolves, who flopped last night. I mean, it's just insane how far this has gotten. Now, maybe you're right. Maybe the fact they're not going to win the title this year, that will calm some of that. Maybe it literally is only related to the fact that they're the defending champs. But for me, like, the disrespect to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, like what we are watching him do is Michael Jordan stuff. Like Michael Jordan, he's been better than Michael in a lot of elements. A lot of statistics will prove that out. And to me, it's just, there was this clip that I retweeted and was like, this team is actually truly authentic and likable. Just organically, they're not a bunch of tankers. Like they didn't tank to get top three picks like the Spurs did. They didn't get three top three picks. That's not how they were built. They were built completely organically through shrewd management, not tanking. So they've somehow, Colby, become the poster child for tanking and flopping. Two things they frankly do not do at any high level. Or if they did, they'd be awful at it, because they were 17th in free throws this year. It's just, to me, this has been an examination of how our society works now and how social media can really drive people to this Thunder derangement syndrome, where even guys I respect like Andy Johnson and Brendan Porath, I mention them all the time on this show, the Shotgun Star, great golf podcast.
I saw your tweet.
They begin their show the other day just bemoaning how the Thunder have ruined basketball. And then Brendan tweeted about it last night. I had to come at him a little bit. Like, he's too smart. Thoughtful individuals have bought into the same BS that you see everywhere. To me, that is just, it's really been shocking to me to see how manipulative society truly is now with social media. Because if you watch the games, I defy anyone to watch that 7-game series against the Spurs and say the Thunder didn't get a crap whistle that series. I defy anyone who's objective to watch that and come to me and say, nope, Thunder, it's rigged. Thunder got all the whistles. Spurs just outplayed them. Like that's just not what. Thunder got some terrible whistles throughout that entire series, including last night.
Yeah, and Wimby's whistle is just god level. He flopped all over Oklahoma City last night. Like he flopped like crazy. I'm in a pretty healthy place with all that stuff, because I really am at the point where I'm like, I just don't care what all these people think about this team, because I love this team. Like the people that they are, Presti talks about people, not players. Like the people that these guys are, the chemistry, the fun, like the interviews with Nick Gallo, like Jay Will and his energy, iHeart, everything in the community. Like Shea is just the most humble superstar who just, I mean, this team is lovable, man. I love this team. And I don't care if other people don't. I really don't. Like, whether it's internet dorks, whether it's Jay Williams, whether it's Andy and Brendan, like, I just, yes, it can get exhausting sometimes if I just sit and scroll? Yeah, it can. But I love this team, man. I love this team. I love these players. I love our coach. I love that we're always taking the high road. I love that whenever one of our guys takes a hard playoff foul, he's not throwing a temper tantrum every time he hits the floor like Stephon Castle. Like, my God, dude, like, go play tennis. Seriously, if you don't want anybody to touch you, go play tennis. The other guy will be 50 feet away at all times. Like, why does Stephon Castle even play basketball? He doesn't like coming into contact with other human beings. Like, he's an introvert. He needs personal space. What is your problem, dude? Like, get up and go shoot your free throws. What an absolute dork that guy is.
The Spurs are who you should actually hate. I mean, yes. Wimby is the one who gets the ridiculous whistle. They're the ones who actually play, like, the most ridiculous physical brand of, like, people act like Lou Dort. Like, what people think Lou Dort is, Stephon Castle and Devin Vassell just did, as far as mugging Shea.
Carter Bryant tackled him, truck-sticked him twice in Game 6, and the result of the two truck-sticks was one common foul. Like stuff like that, that's what people think Lou Dort is. No, Lou Dort is a joker who sticks an arm or a leg out sometimes. He flails his arms and legs. Lou Dort has never just run in the paint and truck-sticked the other team's star player. It's never happened. Carter Bryant did it twice in Game 6, and Zach Zarba's like, well, he didn't hit him in the head. There's no targeting, common foul. Like, Zach Zarba, you're a dork. That's a non-basketball play. What are we talking about?
And Wimby hit, like, three people in the head last night. They didn't review one of them. Like, that's ultimately, I think, where this will come around, Colby. Like you mentioned, if the Spurs go on to win the finals, which I think you and I probably both expect them to do, like,
Wembanyama? No, I'm not picking the Spurs to win the finals. No.
Well, I hope you're right. But regardless, I think people will watch the Spurs even closer in the finals. And we're really rooting, like, the country's really rooting for Wembanyama, this guy who has, like, the most ridiculous physical, like, that's the thing to me, like, how Shea has become unlikable when he's literally self-made and he's skill-based, whereas Wembanyama is literally just like a science project who just is taller than everyone, essentially, and has all the dark arts, so the histrionics, the flopping. Cried like he won the title last night, getting a little ahead of himself, as if he won the championship, whereas the Knicks just walked off the floor. I get it, a sweep versus winning in Game 7. It's two different emotions. I grant you that. But I think people will come around and want the Thunder to win next time around if they get a full another 7 games out of Wembanyama's ridiculousness.
Could be, yeah. I've got Knicks in 6, Carson. These teams played 3 times this year. They played in the NBA Cup Final. The Knicks won that game 124-113. They played in San Antonio on December 31st. The Spurs won that game 134-132. And then they played in New York on March 1st, and the Knicks won that game 114-89. They have no fear of Victor Wembanyama, unlike Oklahoma City. They match up much better with the Spurs, unlike Oklahoma City. The Knicks and the Spurs defend in very different ways. The Knicks and the Thunder, pardon me, defend in very different ways. The Thunder are willing to give up a lot of those threes. They might have to evaluate that moving forward against Spurs with all the shooters that they've got. The Knicks defend the three-point line, I think, better than the Thunder. Thunder, obviously, a much better defensive team, but specifically against the Spurs, the matchup is just better. The Spurs are still very young and inexperienced. They haven't been through all this stuff before. I know the Knicks haven't been to the finals, but they've played a lot of playoff games together, and those are veterans that they've got going. It's not some Jalen Brunson heater. Everybody on that team is playing well. Everybody on that team is shooting well. They are rested. The Spurs are exhausted from this series. The Spurs emotionally are exhausted from this series. Like you said, I sat there and watched them last night. Wimby was in my corner of the arena. I mean, I'm in the lower bowl in that corner. He's pulling his jersey up over his face. Like, I'm watching him. I'm watching all those emotions pour out. Like, I've got Knicks in 6, Carson. I'm telling you, I think they are a criminally underrated basketball team because of how we view the East and how we just historically view the Knicks. I think they are a really well put together basketball team. I've got Knicks in 6.
I would love that. I think the Garden is going to be just an unbelievable atmosphere. They've been wanting to be good for so long. I would love to see the Spurs go down, but I don't know if I can stomach watching Wembanyama another game, honestly. I'm part of me is kind of glad that series is over. It was just exhausting for all the wrong reasons. But what do you think the Thunder do this offseason before we go to golf?
Just real quick, to be honest with you, last night there was a part of me, a small part, that felt this sense of, like, relief and, like, I've been cut free from this overwhelming stress that has been in my life these last 2 weeks. And I don't know, man. Like, after game one, because I went to game one of this series, the double overtime 41-24 Wimby game, and I think I slept 2 hours that night. I couldn't hardly sleep. My mind was racing. I couldn't sleep. I slept great last night. I slept like a baby, man. I don't know. I felt free. Like, oh my God, I don't have to stress anymore.
I started to like yesterday morning when I woke up, I started this feeling of like dread that I'm going to have to go through that game 7 at night, you know, like I started to kind of like not look forward to the games. They were so stressful. They got down early in every game too. So you never, you never quite felt comfortable even in the games they won, you know? So
also I'm starting a petition. We don't start the games with jump balls anymore. We just alternate who gets the ball first and second half. And you alternate who gets the ball to start the game. I don't think it's fair. San Antonio gets to start the game with the ball every game. I don't think that's fair. Just because he's 20 feet tall doesn't mean they should get the ball every game. Yeah. I'm obviously kidding, but.
And he would foul Chad about half the time, too. They wouldn't call it, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Look, I don't see the Thunder doing much in the way of roster reconstruction. I mean, they didn't have two of their top four players, like you mentioned. I think you just run it back, right? I mean, I think you got to pay Hart. I think you need to keep Hartenstein. I was always kind of the opinion that you just – after this year, you let him walk. But after the job he did on Wimby, you need a body like that. He's just one of your better players overall. When he went on the court, they couldn't rebound. That the reason they signed him, that reason is still there when he's not out there. So I think Dort. I'm fully out on the Lu Dort experience. It's been great. You're always being an NBA champion, but he is a total liability come playoff time. He can shoot 40% in the regular season, but he's an absolute offensive killer, and against the Spurs he didn't have much of a defensive role either.
Lu Dort will forever be loved in Oklahoma City, and I wish him well in his next stop. I think that's kind of the obvious move this summer, and I think he kind of knows it's coming too. I don't know if people know he signed with Clutch Sports a few months ago. Like, I think he thinks that this could be his big payday of his career, and it could be. Despite how a lot of Thunder fans feel about him right now, there are teams around the league who need that guy on the perimeter as a defender. Like, I look at the Lakers, and I'm like, God, do the Lakers need a perimeter defender? You know who would guard Shea when the Thunder played the Lakers? It would be Lu Dort. Like, they need that guy to guard the other team's star because they don't have that guy right now. So there's teams that would pay Lu Dort a lot of money to come sign up. Yeah. So we can pick up his option and trade him for something, and then he can sign an extension somewhere else. I would keep half an eye on whether A.J. Mitchell comes back. I know the reason that you want him to come back is because he's super cheap and he's a highly productive player. That's also why he has an unbelievable amount of value if you think that you can have Shea, Dub, and then you can get fill-in minutes from McCain as a ball handler. It obviously cuts into your depth there, but you've got insane value right now with AJ because of that contract. So I would keep an eye on that. And then something with picks 12 and 17, I think the Thunder probably don't make both of those picks. So that's just kind of what I'm keeping an eye on. I'd be really surprised if Chet wasn't on this team next year. For a lot of reasons, some of the ones I mentioned earlier, and another big one is people, not players. This locker room is special. This team is special. The vibes are special. I think they can still make it work against the Spurs with Chad. Again, I think they win them. I think they beat them this year if Dub and AJ are healthy. Like, those are two massive additions you would be making. Like, we have to keep in mind, if we were drafting players in this series and everybody's healthy, J-Dub is the obvious third pick. It's not even close. It's some order of Shea and Wimby, and then everybody is just snap picking J-Dub at three. So, I think the Thunder will be fine, and everybody take a breath. Game 7 losses hurt. Take a breath.
And if Wimby doesn't hit a 35-footer, like, the Thunder have already won the series, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
One game
yeah.
one.
Yeah, no doubt.
Sliding, to think about.
Sliding doors moment. Also crazy to think about is that some people are not using Echo Contracting right now. Carson, Echo Contracting is a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. We know the guys at Echo Contracting. They are good people. They will take good care of you. So give them a shout out. Echo Contracting. Carson, Oklahoma State golf is cooking. Shout out before we move on to all the exciting things happening on the men's side. Annie Young and the Oklahoma State women went into nationals as the 21st ranked team in the country. They advanced to match play. They got drummed in the quarters, 5-0. It happens. Arkansas's a really good team. They've got a couple of really special players on that team. But I think that they deserve a lot of credit for how they played to get themselves into match play. And that's just – it's big time. So congratulations to the Oklahoma State women for making it as far as they did. Hopefully that's a building block for a lot of young players. And next year, maybe instead of being the 21st-ranked team in the country, maybe they ascend and they're a top 10, top 15 team in the country and can work their way back up to where they were, what was it, four or five years ago, whenever they were in the national championships and just narrowly lost to Ole Miss. So good stuff on the women's side.
Yeah, really good showing from them for sure. I was panicking a little. Maybe I'm just – it's been a calendar year since we watched Oklahoma State men's golf win a national championship. After the first round, I texted you and was like, they're in trouble after round one. You're like, you said – I think your response was there's 218 more holes left. They'll be fine. And then they absolutely went nuclear yesterday to get – into a T4, but as we're recording this today, again, this will probably be all sorted out by the time you're listening to this show. They're sliding back a little bit, Colby, that today they're T7. Is there another round after this? There's three rounds, right?
Yeah, four. Yeah. So there'll be another round tomorrow, and then match play is Tuesday, Wednesday. So yeah, your text to me was golf team in trouble. They're like eight shots back of match play. That was after round one. And I responded, nah, there's 216 holes left. It'll be shocking if they can't make that up. And the 216 number for the uninitiated to college golf, you've got five guys, you take four scores every round. So 54 holes left times four scores that you're taking every round. That's all these other teams having to be better than Oklahoma State 4 days in a row. Like, you can afford a bad day whenever there are that many scores counting over 4 days. They're T7 right now. They're three shots clear of ninth. And again, they're halfway through this third round, so there's still 27 holes times four players. So that's what, 104 holes still left at this point. So it's just, I know it doesn't feel like a lot of golf, but it really is when you're counting that many scores over that many holes. The cream usually rises to the top. I'd be really surprised if they didn't make match play. And Carson, Auburn is at number one right now. You're probably going to have to go through them at some point to win the Natty anyway. I really want to see Stout and Koivun. It would not break my heart if Oklahoma State stuck into match play as the eight seed and we got Stout, Koivun in the first round. Like, dude, sign me up. You got to go through them anyway. Like, that's appointment television for again, for the uninitiated college golf. I understand there are very few people listening to this who probably follow college golf as closely as I do. Oklahoma State Auburn in the first round, that would be like, I mean, dude, I don't even know how to put it in terms of what we'd be watching. It would be college golf's SGA and Wimby going at it in the first round of the NCAA match play quarters, and it would be unbelievable.
Well, there was a big stretch. I don't know if that streak ended last year or not, but the number one seed had never won. The number one seed going into match play had never won the national championship. That streak might have been snapped last year, if my memory serves. Maybe not.
Oklahoma State was not the number one seed last year, I don't believe. I think we were like the four seed, maybe.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, I don't think we were one.
Like,
so
that's the volatility of match play. So, like, you know, I would love to see it 8-1 Auburn. Like you said, you have to go through them eventually anyway, so might as well take them out at the beginning.
Was Oklahoma State – hold on, real quick. Was Oklahoma State not the number one seed going into match play in 2018 at Carson? I thought they were, but off the top of my head, I mean, I could be wrong.
I feel like they were too, but
– it doesn't matter. I was just curious. It doesn't matter.
I'm going to have to look that up at some point, but
– They won the Natty. It doesn't matter. It's a match play. Just get yourself inside the top eight. That's what matters. As far as on the like individual side, if anybody individually could potentially win the Natty, it's looking like Preston Stout. Preston Stout is 9-under currently, and it's been a tough day today for the Cowboys. Gavin Lane's 4-over. Eric Lee is 6-over. Philip Fahlberg Johnson is 6-over. So that's costing Oklahoma State, and they've fallen into a tie for eighth right now. But again, a lot of golf left. I'm not going to fully panic until they actually like miss match play. So if we go over to the individual leaderboard, Stout is 9-under. He is one shot back of Will Hartman from Vanderbilt, a really good player, and Philip Jakubczyk from Arizona. So yeah, he's right there. I'm looking for Koivun here. Boy, I'm scrolling. I don't see Koivun. Where is Jackson Koivun? Jackson Koivun is He's T23, four over today. Preston Stout could be an individual national champion. That will air tomorrow afternoon, late afternoon on Golf Channel, if anybody wants to tune in. And I say tomorrow, by the time everybody listens to this on Monday, it'll be today. That'll be Monday, June 1st, when the individual stroke play is airing, and then match play will air Tuesday and Wednesday. So Preston Stout, one shot back with about 27 holes to go at Omni La Costa in California.
Good memory by you. The only team to get the number one seed and win the national championship was the 2018 team. 17 others Dang. Have failed. One out of wow. 17 since they've gone to match play have won the national title as the one seed. So,
well, it's because really they had the unfair advantage, Carson. They were at their home course. It's an unfair advantage. It's one of the best college golf teams ever of all time.
And we had further proof of that because we had the match on Golf Channel. Really cool deal, Colby. You've been kind of hinting at it for weeks. The 2018 National Championship team, the aforementioned champs, doing a match play at Oaktree National for Golf Channel's YouTube account against the 2025 National Championship team. And they included a sixth golfer because of Sam Stevens, who's now on the PGA Tour. He got to play against the current sixth man, and really just a really cool event. And really, Colby, this is much better for golf when you can have these things pre-recorded to kind of bounce around. It's not just so much dead air when you're driving a golf cart to every single shot of every single match. Those broadcasts, like you see with, you know, Tiger and Phil, those get a little long and cumbersome. This was a really tightly packaged, really well done with the orange and black shot tracer. You had your buddy Brentley Romine from Golf Channel was hosting, rocking the Swingin' Pete hat and the Oaktree National polo. It was a really cool spectacle for everyone to get to tune in on Friday.
Yeah, it was. It's weird. I saw a comment on Pistols Firing. Somebody was like, is this the big golf announcement? I was hoping it was something bigger. I'm like, I don't know what you're wanting, man. This is awesome. This is unbelievable publicity for Oklahoma State golf. To have these guys come back, like, do you realize what a big deal it is to be able to, right in the middle of peak golf season, college and pro, to get Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf, Austin Eckroat, Zach Boshue, Sam Stevens, and Chris Ventura all back in town on the same day to match up in an off week with the current version of Oklahoma State's men's golf, who just won the national championship. And I just, for young people, a lot of young people are so into YouTube and YouTube golf and all this stuff. I know you and I prefer like traditional golf and don't totally get into it, but this thing's going to do numbers. This is going to be a major recruiting pitch. I mean, this is awesome. This is unbelievable. The matches were great. I have not had a chance yet. It just came out on Friday. I've had a really busy weekend. I haven't had a chance to go in and watch the coverage. I'm really curious to see how it was produced, how the golf course looked. I've played that golf course several times, so I love watching the best players in the world play a golf course that I've played on. It's just a lot of fun to see how much better they are and how they play it, all the different holes and hit all the shots and those things. But, yeah, having those guys in town, having you know, I haven't watched it, but I had some results sent to me from that day. My understanding is that a very tired Victor Hovland flew in. This was done the Monday after the RBC Heritage at Oaktree National. It aired Friday, but it was shot several weeks back. So Victor Hovland had a full Masters week where he went low on Sunday. He then immediately went to Hilton Head, played the RBC Heritage, where he was in the final pairing on Saturday, collapsed on the weekend. He was exhausted coming home. But my understanding is that Stout drummed him. So, like, that's pretty cool for the current team and for Preston Stout's confidence, for Victor Hovland, one of the you know, premier players on the PGA Tour, to come home and you take it to him. Like, that's just really good stuff from Preston Stout. So, yeah, here it is. You just sent it to me. 4-3, Stout over Hovland, and then Fallberg Johnson was the other winner for the 25 team. Matt Wolf won 6-5 over Gavin Lane. Austin Eckroat beat Ethan Fang 1-up. Stevens won 4-2 over John Wild, and then Boshue won 1-up over Eric Lee. And that Boshue-Lee match was the last match on the course. They were all square through 15 in that match, and then Boshue ended up pulling out the win for the 18 team. There was a non-zero chance that Eric Lee could have beaten Zach Boshue, and this could have been a 3-3 tie between 18 and 25. So I'm sure all of the old guys were appreciative that the final four matches all came up Cowboys. So the course record holder out there, Austin Eckroat, wins 1-up over Ethan Fang. Austin Eckroat's course record scorecard hangs in the clubhouse out there. I think it was 61, I think he shot at Oaktree National from the tips, just in tournament conditions and play. It's just – it's unbelievable. It's unfathomable how good these guys are at golf. So great pub for the program, and I truly cannot wait to get in and watch it. My man Brentley was in town and on the call, and that was really cool to get to see Brentley, and I'm sure he had a good time. He's kind of Mr. College Golf, so I'm sure that was cool for him too.
Yeah, I've got the scoreboard pulled up that I sent you for our YouTube watchers. Really, other than the blowouts, you know, Wolf even said, you know, look, Gavin didn't have his best stuff, but he's a really good player. Obviously, Stout taking down Victor Hovland was pretty incredible, and I think speaks to just the talent level that Stout has. And look, Colby, I was on TV for a long time, as people know. Like, I've messed up plenty of scoreboard graphics in my TV career. Had many typos, many misspellings. But how do you misspell Victor Hovland and Chris Ventura? They spelled Chris C-H-R-I-S for our audio listeners, and Victor V-I-C-T-O-R. It's not like Victor Hovland's some obscure DP World Tour player that they don't deal with a lot. He's a PGA. He's like one of the biggest names on the PGA Tour. And how do they misspell Chris Ventura? What happened? They did everything so right, and then that just looks so bad.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. C-H-R-I-S, Ventura. I'm like, Victor Hovland, V-I-C-T-O-R. I'm like, could somebody not have sent this to me? Like, they could have sent it to me. I would have proofread it for them.
You should have had Brentley, but I'm also showing now Victor Hovland getting the trophy. He's celebrating as only Victor could. He's holding it up and then giving it a big smooch like he does. Victor's won a lot of weird trophies over the years. He won like the Valspar with that big snake. He won like a rooster at some point. He's like the king. He's the king of the weird trophies, but he's got the Bucking Bronco trophy here, as we're showing on YouTube.
You know who Victor reminds me of, just like personality wise, major J Will vibes. Victor and J Will just cut from the same cloth. It seems like it contagious smiles, light up a room, just happy go lucky. Everybody enjoys being around them. It's some definite chemistry there.
Pretty cool story for Oklahoma State golf. It was kind of awkward. They had such a bad score on that Friday. I was like, oh no, they're on YouTube right now and they're not doing well. Maybe the jokes probably write themselves from rival schools, but we'll have to see how they play out. You know, we'll be on red alert, Colby, for an emergency pod if the Cowboys are able to win back-to-back national championships. That certainly would warrant one of those. But appreciate you joining me this week, and hopefully we're talking very soon for an emergency pod. We'll have to see.
Yeah, no doubt. We will be on high alert, and again, give me Stout Koivun, and fingers crossed, man. Stout's so good. Go get yourself the individual national championship. That would be unbelievable. And Carson, off the top of my head, I don't have it pulled up right now. It's right at the end of the show. If we do an emergency pod, we can bring it up. I think Augusta National has started extending an invite to the reigning NCAA champion. I think, to the Masters.
Yeah, because the Lasasso kid got one, right, from Ole Miss?
Yes.
He turned it down to go live. That wasn't very smart.
He turned it down to go to live. Yeah, tough scene. Ooh, yikes. Yeah.
Speaking of which, it was good to see Matt Wolf again. I miss watching Matt Wolf play golf.
Yeah, me too. That's a good shout. Matt Wolf's awesome. So yeah, it was cool seeing him there. He's a lot of fun. So yeah, good stuff all around. And Carson, this was fun. Try not to let the Sunday sadness get you down too much. It's our team gets to be part of this legendary rivalry for the next 6, 7, 8 years, and that's awesome.
I hope. The NBA can be fleeting. It's now going to be 8 consecutive years of a new champion, and we all thought that the Thunder Heat were going to be battling forever, and we only got one of those. So hopefully you're right. We'll have to see, though.
You're right. It's it can happen. Teams get broken up. There's salary cap stuff. But, like, our team here in Oklahoma City is writing NBA history right now, and that's cool. That's pretty cool. Yep, so
very cool.
Hopefully Oklahoma State men's golf will write some more NBA history. Hopefully baseball can grind this thing out at the regional. And we might be talking to you on Wednesday night. We might be back next weekend. We'll just see how it all plays out. Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching as always. Thanks for our great sponsors, Chris's and Echo. Go Pokes!